This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mittline. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Mittline.
And good evening to all of you. Boy, are we in for a good time tonight. It's always wonderful when I can find someone on my wavelength, doing the kind of stuff that I do, so we can get into an even deeper discussion. And that's where we're going tonight. I am thrilled that I have Dr. Linda Bachman with me tonight. Linda is a licensed psychologist and a regression therapist. She's the author of Bringing Your Soul to Light and the new book, The Evolving Soul. And she's been in private practice for 36 years. Doctors Norm Shealy, Hank Wesselman, and Larry Dossian have all endorsed her books. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff. Her life commitment, like mine, is guiding souls to learning, to evolution, to growth. And so tonight we're going to be talking about the new book, which is The Evolving Soul, and very much on how she and I both look at past lives, pre-birth planning, and why it can help you now. She has also, she's colleagues with Robert Schwartz, but I think that it works a little bit differently between the two, so I am delighted to have a whole new playground to play in. Linda, thank you for taking time out of your nuts schedule to be with us tonight.
It's a pleasure, Corby, to be here.
Now, the quick 30-second. People who listen know that I have been working with Rob to do work in pre-birth planning. My thing is past life retrieval. But there's an enormous, enormous difference between past life retrieval and past life regression, which is one of the things that you do. My shorthand for that is, when it's retrieval, you tell me, you know, this is my situation. I have the library card. I go running around in the Akasha can bring you down a book. Regression is totally different. That's when you've got the library card and you're in the stacks. So how does regression specifically help someone actually maybe a little more deeply than retrieval? I'm totally open to that idea.
Well, I never want to negate either opportunity, because I think both opportunities to be told about your past lives or to uncover them yourself with guidance, or, you know, some of us uncover them to a degree without guidance. So, you know, all is good. That's the bottom line. But I think the distinction, Corby, in my experience with clients and for myself personally when I've been a regression client, is that the regression client walks through step by step, often with a lot of emotion, but not always with a lot of emotion, but moves scene to scene in significant past lives to either know what they've done really well, because that is the way our guides choose some lives to show us, or to know their stuck places, and their stuck places that are affecting their life today. So it's a visceral, you know, physical, emotional, also cognitive experience for the client to uncover the past life themselves with support and help. And it's often surprising to clients, as it was to me when I was early on a regression client. It's surprising to people that they can be supported and guided to uncover their own past lives. And they don't, you know, quick comment, they don't always uncover what they thought they would. So it's like, be careful what you wish for. You're not necessarily going to learn about, have you known your beloved romantic partner before? You might. Your guides make the choice. You might uncover a life that completely surprises you. Not because it's awful necessarily, just because it's a surprise.
People do tend to think that karma is carrot and stick, whereas we understand karma as simply the road. So let's look at that. If you've got a series of three or four past lives that talk about a certain theme, are all of those lives going to come up in a regression session? Is there any kind of order that guides tend to give us? When they're willing to work with us on this particular homework project, how do the guides determine what we need?
Well, the bottom line is that our guides that reside in the spiritual realm and our higher self, and I never want to ignore that our higher self is involved. So as probably your listeners know, Corby, our higher self is our soul energy that doesn't come into our body, that exists in spirit at all times. So it's a little bit of a bird's eye view, maybe a little bit of a conspiring in the kindest of, you know, terms, the most benevolent terms, where our guides, and I'll just put it that way so it's simple, where our guides basically have a little quick conference and they say, well, okay, so I'll just use myself as an example. Linda came for a regression today. What particular life of hers at any point in history do we want her to basically re-experience? Because it has to do with something that's going on in her life today. And in order to evolve further along Linda's soul journey, she needs to know about this particular past life that we're going to open the doors to in her experience in the regression therapist's office.
Okay, now, if time is a web, not a line, and we're experiencing all of these at once, does it really matter? Is it a past or a future life?
Great question, and I love, Corby, that you've brought that up. And this might challenge some of your listeners' perspective in it. I don't know. It might challenge your perspective. That is the school of thought, what you've just described, the past, present, and future all happening at once. Now, perhaps from a very, very high frequency perspective, maybe that's true. But when our guides work with us to evolve as a soul, and that's the only reason we come into body, is to evolve as a soul, and I can say more in a few minutes about why, but because we come into body to evolve as a soul, our guides work with us in current time, because we're in body right now with our own awareness, as Linda, as Corby, as, you know, Susan and Jim and whoever else, and our guides are working with us from an August the 7th, 2014 perspective. It's not that everything is happening at once. Otherwise, how would we know how to evolve or what to work on?
I frankly rather like that. That makes sense. I do know that there are real resonances. When you know about a past life, you are going to get little clicks here and there in this present one, especially if you can find yourself in history. And that doesn't mean, yes, I was Anne Boleyn because I can't wear a turtleneck. Sometimes you can find who you were, do some genealogy or something. My perfect example is right now we're all looking at, it's 100 years from World War I and what was happening on August 7th, 1914. And because that's a life I remember, it's clicking through. So let's say someone does a regression and they are working on a particular situation, and they get a life that starts clicking through in this one. They find out, let's say, it's a life that was in 1905 New York, and they go to New York, and all of a sudden they see brownstones from the time, or they see a fashion exhibit for the time. How can we not get stuck in the fun, is what I'm saying. It's one of the reasons I tell people using past lives is wonderful, but you're not supposed to just sit there and see a movie of all the wonderful people you were. That's not useful.
Well, a couple of comments. Let me just start by saying, as you probably know, though many of us may have had past lives that are historically documentable, our guides don't often show us those lives. Maybe largely probably because we could easily get caught up in the ego-based notion of, as you say, I was Anne Boleyn or I was, you know, King Louis the 16th or whoever I was. I don't personally have a lot of clients uncovering historically documentable lives specific. That happens on occasion. But what you're saying is really common, that notion of, okay, so I had a life in France in, you know, the late 1600s, 1700s, and then we go to Versailles or whatever, and it's like, oh, yeah, oh, this place feels familiar. We get chills, we get fear, we get anxiety, and so on and so forth. But what is critical, and so I'll kind of jump to my, what I might call my global or umbrella perspective, is that not only do we need to know about our lives where we accomplish things that were useful, but we also have to know about our lives where we fell short. And we all have lives at both ends of the spectrum. In order to evolve as a soul, we need to live our life intentions, both pre-birth intentions, and often intentions that are, you know, added in as addendums, you might say, to our pre-birth agreement, so that we evolve, and because then we become of service to humanity's evolution. And I think probably any of us who follow current events on the planet, whether it's global warming or the Palestinians and the Israelis, we know there's the need for progress on this planet. That's our job, especially as mid-range and more than mid-range of soul experience incarnate souls.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit. Soul experience, I totally get the idea that a lot of our higher self doesn't come into body. A lot of us is still upstairs. When we're deciding who we're going to be and how we're going to be, there's that crossover with ego and soul. Can you, I know I have my definition, but I'd like to hear your definition of what's ego, why do we make it, is that what determines what we do in the next past life, or is that determined by a bigger plan from our higher self?
Okay, good questions. Well, when we come into body, I always like to say we're tripart, meaning when we create this pre-birth plan, we choose a body, you know, tall, short, Asian, Native American, you know, leaning on the heavy side, leaning on the thin side, whatever. We choose a body, capability, lack, you know, some kind of physical problem, physical challenge, maybe minimal physical challenge. And we choose a brain, and that's our gray matter that sits inside of our skull. Our human personality or our ego resides within that gray matter. And then the third part is, you know, it's like a recipe. The third portion is an aspect of our soul energy and all of what's come before, what I like to call our soul memory code, that is all of our past life experiences. So our ego, I think of ego as that human Linda that says, gosh, I'd like to, you know, I really like ice cream. I'd like to eat, you know, ice cream three times a day and go to all the best ice cream parlors near where I live and enjoy it. That's my ego. My soul would say, no, that's not healthy for your body. Please don't do that. So that's the distinction, and sadly, we live in a culture on this planet that is more oriented toward ego than soul energy.
All right. When I try to explain ego, I basically tell people that in order to live on this planet and do your lessons, you need the ego. And evolution helps us see, this is what ego did. This is why I did it. Great. I can loosen it up right now because I've learned that part of my lesson. Does that track with what you're saying?
Yes, because in psychology, we have a term. So I probably should have defined my way. That's the trouble with human language, you know, that we're using words and we know what our semantics mean, but somebody else might have a different version. So In psychology, we have something called ego strength. And ego strength or self-esteem or belief in oneself is what carries us forward. And if we don't have ego strength, meaning ability to make choices and feel some sense of capability, when I speak of ego, I mean that me, and only me, and only what I want, to the exclusion of what might be useful for me or anyone else. So that's the version of ego that I'm talking about.
Got it. Okay. In our house, that means cats are ego on 4 feet. Now, one of the things that you talk about are, do we have lives other than on Earth? And my understanding is we have. Very often when I'm working with a client, you just get this feeling. My key is I look at them and say, okay, I'm going to give you two words, and I want you to tell me immediately which one you resonate to. Human, other. When they are other, when they're what I call the half wings, they will respond to other immediately. If they have to really think about it, nope, they're human. Me, I'm human. I like the human experience. It's where I learn best. But I honestly believe that there have to be other sentient creatures who come down here on a foreign exchange program. Am I on target?
Oh, you're so on target. And I think you know that. And obviously, this is for the sake of discussion. Absolutely, positively. And so let me see if I can make this simple. You know, we're talking about such a huge topic and trying to put it into words and simplify. So as we evolve as a soul, let's go back to the beginning of planet Earth. And, you know, when I say what I believe, basically what I talk about is all the information that I learn from clients in both of the types of regressions that I guide, past life and between lives regression, where we understand who's the client as a soul in between lives regression. So I don't put ideas in the mind of the client. They tell me, I don't tell them. And that's why I believe that the work that I do is, you might call it case study, client by client by client. But then I merge what the repetitive pieces that I hear from one client to the next starts helping me to understand soul evolution. So here's my understanding. Before Earth came into being, before we became a planet, let's just say when Earth was new, the first souls that inhabited this planet came from somewhere else. They came from another celestial body. And my understanding of that is that the souls that came and still that come from somewhere else are more, they come from a more healthy place than here. They come from places that are egalitarian. They come from places where their diet is healthy, where their relationships are healthy, and we might call those sacred locations. So early on, all of us came from somewhere else. Now, I'm like you, Corby. I'm what I like to call an earth-based soul. But I have lots of clients and talk with lots of parents with children who are what I would call ET souls. And that just simply means the bulk of their soul evolution happened somewhere else, and they've not been on Earth for many, 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 many lives. So there are those ET souls that might be in their first five incarnations on Earth, and I can usually tell as soon as I meet them. Now, I don't tell them that. I wait to see if that comes through in regression. And then there are also some souls that I might call, that I like to call star travelers. Those are souls who've had most of their lives elsewhere, but they may have had 50 to 100 Earth lives, so they get Earth more easily. They function here more easily than those souls that are in their first few lives on Earth. And normally I can even tell at times by looking at someone if they're an Earth-based soul or a non-Earth-based soul.
What do you see that would cue you to that?
Facial structure. And believe it or not, and you know, Spock on Star Trek, they knew something about ears. Pointed facial features, much sharper angles to their face, their ears, and not always, just often. Their way of wearing their hair and or their style of dress looks less like the norm. So, you know, it's funny. I'll give you another quick example because I'm thinking about a client I worked with yesterday. Even sometimes, believe it or not, and I don't want people to make quick generalizations, but email address. An Earth-based soul's email address might be, you know, lindabackman@gmail.com. That's not my email address. I'm happy to tell people what mine is, but you know, that kind of an email address, as opposed to enlightened being, star traveler. And I'm not criticizing those kinds of email addresses. They're just signs. But non-Earth-based souls that have not had lots and lots of lives here, have more physical issues. They have allergy issues. They have nutritional issues, and so on and so forth. They're having trouble adapting to the human body. And I think that so many of these children and some adults that are being labeled on the autistic spectrum today, I don't think it's because mom took a vaccine in her 12th week or 6th week of pregnancy. I think it's because these are very advanced souls from places other than Earth, and they don't understand our way of life or our means of communication.
Are there particular countries where more of these other halflings tend to congregate?
Oh, wow, that's a beautiful question. Because I just experienced that last spring. The answer is yes. Earl and I were in Japan for a month working last spring. And as soon as I got there, I won't even struggle to figure out what it was. Maybe it was just intuition. Maybe it's something I saw with my eyes as I observed a lot of the Japanese people, which honestly, they are lovely people, and we loved being in Japan. But I began to think that there are more ET souls, what I call ET souls, probably what you call halflings, in Japan. So I was doing a lot of regression work with Japanese people when I was there, and I started posing this question, you know, through the clients to their guides to see what kind of answers I would receive. And what I was told, so I asked the question repetitively, are there or are there not? And when I ask questions to clients, I always give them polar opposites. Are there or are there not more ET souls residing in Japan than perhaps residing in the United States or England or, you know, that sort of thing? And the answer that came back more than once was yes. And one of the things they said that I thought was fascinating, I said, well, why? And one of the answers was ET souls have difficulty early on incarnating in human bodies. And the Japanese, as we all know, they're Eastern in their philosophy. They tend to be more spiritually based than the bulk of, let's just say, Americans. And they have smaller bodies that aren't as hard. This may seem weird or may not seem weird, but what was said, they have smaller bodies that the ET soul can manage more easily in a smaller body, and they have a pretty healthy diet, and that's easier for an ET soul as well. So I thought that was fascinating. Okay.
We're coming up on break in about 2 minutes. Linda, can you tell people where to find you, where to find your books?
Sure. My website is www.raven, like the bird, heart, like the heart in our chest, ravenheartcenter.com. And both my books are available through our website, but they're available through Amazon and bookstores. And again, my books are Bringing Your Soul to Light and The Evolving Soul, which actually publication date, tomorrow is the birth of book number two, The Evolving
Woo-hoo!
Soul. Yeah.
Perfect. If you're just joining us, I'm having a great romp with Dr. Linda Bachman about her new book, The Evolving Soul, past lives, soul regression, soul retrieval, all kinds of stuff. And we are not done yet. So stick with us. This is Corby Mitlide on Fire Through Spirit. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit empowerradio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mitlide next on Empower Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Roosie. I'm a retired teacher. I'm 91 years old, and this is how I live united. I say retired, but not really. Once a week, I read books to children as part of United Way's education program. Reading to a child creates links between language and literacy. It creates a bond between grown-up and child. And believe it or not, it prepares them for a better academic future. Oh, we read about frogs and flies and pigs with wings, all sorts of juicy stuff. It's a joy to watch all those little faces. I figure I have the time and they have the need. And I've always believed that if we're not here to help each other, then what are we here for, really? My name is Ruth Roosie. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mitlide.
Welcome back, friends. We are talking today with Linda Bachman, whose book, The Evolving Soul, comes out this month. Linda has been doing hypnosis, soul pre-birth regression for a long time. She is doing the same kind of work, though with a slightly different bent that Rob Schwartz does in his books, Your Soul's Planning, Your Soul's Gift. And we are having fun playing in the deep edge of the pool today. A couple of things that I wanted to ask about. You know, we do past life regression, past life retrieval, but there are people who do things called soul retrieval and fragmented souls, and I'm not sure I buy that. I don't think the soul can be fragmented per se, though parts of it can be down here and parts of it can stay upstairs watching with a bag of popcorn over the balcony. Where do you stand with that, especially when you go back and you do these regressions with people? Can you lose a part of your soul?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Corby, and you know this, we're always guided, and your questions are such cool questions. As I was shifting from being a general psychologist, this is, you know, over the past 21 or so years, as I was shifting because of some spiritual experiences that happened through the death of a colleague, as I discovered there was more than just this life, and I was in my middle 40s when that happened over 20 years ago, I started wanting to delve into and learn about lots of different spiritual perspectives, spiritual traditions, and one of the places that I went for learning was to begin to study indigenous culture and indigenous spirituality that we might just, overriding term, would be shamanism. And among many different healing tools that I learned through wonderful workshops and teachings, and one of my favorite teachers, and I think her work is great, so I'll mention her, and that is Sandra Ingerman. And I ultimately took soul retrieval training with Sandy Ingerman. And the bottom line is I think regression work and soul retrieval work that shamans and shamanic communities have been doing for, you know, who knows how long, longer than probably anybody really can track, is all interrelated. So what I believe happens is in kind of an energy loss, you might say, Corby, where during our current life or in past life or both, an energy loss occurs that is at the soul level. And yes, we call it soul retrieval, or we call it soul fragmentation. But what I think happens is it's energetic, and of course, what is our soul? Our soul is pure energy, pure divine energy. An aspect of who we are is, you might say, debilitated because of trauma. And we need to find that trauma and regain that soul energy that is, you might say, run into hiding. It isn't completely different. Now, this may be a stretch for your listeners, but, you know, bear with Linda, who's a psychologist as well as a regression therapist. What leads to what's called dissociative identity disorder, or what leads to, the old-fashioned term for that is multiple personality disorder. That's when, as a young child, there's such significant abuse that the personality kind of splits into different parts, and effective therapists can bring those parts back together and help that person function as a more of a whole person. Well, the soul can do that as well. So, quick example. Years ago when I first learned soul retrieval, and this is a current life example, but it can be completely similar to what we discover when we learn about trauma in past life. Quick example of soul retrieval. I was doing soul retrieval with a client, and I gained these images that they didn't mean anything to me. And when I energetically finished the process I was taught that's unspoken, then I said to the client, here's what I saw. I saw a baby blanket, I saw a rocking chair, and I saw a baby bottle. You had some kind of soul injury or energetic, you know, in painful experience in your life, but I don't know what that means. And she said, you got it. And I didn't know this about her. And she said, I've been told that when I was 18 months old in current life, I had spinal meningitis. And I was taken to the hospital. They thought I was going to die. They immediately took away my bottle, which, of course, didn't make any sense. But they took away my bottle. They burned my blanket. And I survived, but my mother rocked me for hours and hours upon end. And it was extremely traumatic. So she said, yes, I believe there was a soul loss, if you want to call it that. Well, the same thing happens in past lives. If I was, I had a client yesterday who was killed during actually the time of Jesus and the time of Herod, and was hit from the back of his head and killed. He has neck pain that has never been explained in current life, and this man is in his 50s. Our hope is that uncovering this past life and having been clubbed in the back of the head will help release the neck pain. It's simply about energetic soul impact, you might say.
I can match you on that one. I used to have 5-odd stabbing pains on the left side of my torso from about clavicle down to navel. We couldn't figure out what that was until I was regressed, lived out the life where I was shot down in 17. Where did the bullets hit? I have never had that pain since.
Wow. Yeah.
So, right there.
Yep.
Now, let me ask this, because for me, this is important. When is it appropriate and when is it not appropriate to go for a regression session? Because not everybody is equipped to handle it. No matter how superb you are, there are some things that you just shouldn't have to deal with, that it won't serve the client. Are there any alarm bells for that? Or are there any things that we as a potential regression client should see?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great question, Corby. I completely believe that, and probably like you, Corby, I'm simply the conduit. I'm the instrument that Spirit uses to help the client access a past life. But the past life that the client examines, as I've said before on your show today, tonight, is that the life the client looks at is selected by the higher self and the guides of the client. The guides of the client are not going to bring forward a past life that guides don't think the client is ready for. So if someone feels ready, or, you know, at least feels 60 to 75% ready for regression, I would say they need to seriously consider moving forward because, again, their guides are in charge.
Okay, that makes sense. The reason I was asking is because some people want it solely to find out, well, was I famous? Or I'm so mad at my husband, I want a life that shows he was a real bastard and blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, it's when we get inappropriate questions when I'm just doing an intuitive consult too. So that's why I was wondering if we find ourselves going in a certain direction, thinking about it in a certain way, does that flag us that we are not approaching it in the correct way?
Well, for me, when I guide a regression, I'm going to spend time interviewing and getting to know the client, and we'll end up discussing that type of issue that you're mentioning. And I will make sure the client understands we can't demand to be shown a particular life. It doesn't work that way. So I say to clients, let's put out intention. You'd like to learn if you had a past life, and you kind of think you were in the court of Louis the 16th, or you think you've had a really horrendous life with this best friend that just, you know, stopped wanting to be your best friend. And I always say to the client, I cannot guarantee any past life will, in particular, will come forward. And what needs to come forward is what, again, your guides believe you need. Now, I also strongly, I'll say no, that right now we're in a time frame on this planet that we're being pushed hard to evolve. We're being pushed hard to live our life intentions. We're being pushed hard to clean up our act and to move, we might say, from karma to dharma. Now, if we're still in body, we still have karma. So I'm not saying I or anybody I know has cleaned up all their karma, but living our dharma means we are living the purpose that we were intended to live in this lifetime. That might mean, you know, doing work like you do, Corby, or like I do, but it also might mean being a great friend, being an excellent kindergarten teacher, you know, being a great neighbor. It doesn't have to be some, you know, out in the forefront or, you know, overt kind of thing. But our guides know what we need. So that is always important for, I believe, for clients to accept.
One of the questions that you've got on your list here, which I got to tell you, my friends out there, I was looking at this list and I was kind of giggling because you all know that we have this figured out from how many years on this show now? Three. One of the questions is, does each incarnation have a purpose? hell yeah. But there are large purposes and smaller ones. For instance, in this life, I'm clearly supposed to be here for self-worth. I'm supposed to be here for dealing with women as equals. This is all the stuff that triggered the difficulties with my mother and the breast cancer and all of the other things I've had to deal with. But there are also, if you will, subsections. Two lives ago, when I was the pilot, I was a great guy, but I was very anti-Semitic. What happens? I get born in a Jewish family this time. So how do we prioritize and how many lessons can we handle without our brains, our egos, or whatever getting fried?
Boy, again, good question. The lessons that are handed to us are challenges to us. Yes, there are people that you might say get fried and make choices. This is kind of a hard question to answer because I think there's so many nuances to it. I certainly have clients and know people that are really on the edge of coping with what's been handed to them in current life. On the other hand, we have free will. You know, nothing is outside of our free will. It doesn't matter what our life intentions, what those intentions are that we brought into body. We have free will to work on those, to not work on those. And so I think it's unlikely. It's my personal experience myself, in my current life. I mean, I certainly, you know, have challenges in my current life, have had and do have. But I find that, like, for example, I'm probably as busy as I've almost ever been in my life. I notice that my guides help me when I'm helping myself, when I'm taking responsibility for my life and I'm moving forward in my life. And I may complain at times, but I don't get stuck in complaining. Then my guides, I can feel it by what they hand to me in my life or how they support me. They're walking the journey right alongside me, but I have to take the steps forward. They can't take the steps forward for me. So I don't know, Corby, if that answers your question or not.
Well, it'll probably plant more seeds, which is the purpose. For me, questions don't have to have absolute answers. Sometimes questions are just fertilizer for more questions. People want to talk to their dead people. And I cheerfully explain we're not dial a dead. If Aunt Rose is on a field trip, she won't be by the phone. But at the same time, you say that we don't incarnate if we don't have more work to do. What about what I term transcendental souls like Yogananda? What about dead Aunt Mabel, who's up there and probably has a better perspective, but she still has her own karma and stuff to deal with? Can she be a guide? What are the rules?
So let me be sure I understand what you're asking. Are you saying would souls like Yogananda still incarnate? If you can, I think I'm a little confused about what are you asking specifically.
Okay, I'm coming at the idea of guides from and we reincarnate because we have stuff from two different angles. One of them is, let's take the smaller one first. We have spirit guides. A lot of people say, well, my grandmother, Anna, is really one of my spirit guides. But Anna's soul is still human, human-based, and she's still got her work to do. Can our departed loved ones truly be guides for us? Do they have enough of a perspective? That's the first question.
Okay. The answer is yes, they can be guides. They may not be our primary guide. My understanding is at any point in time in our current life, we basically have a primary guide. That primary guide is the level of evolution of that primary guide is tied to our level of evolution. So it's like if we just think of on a scale from 0 to 10 as we evolve. If our guide is at the level of a 9, then we're probably not at the level of a 9. We're probably at a 7 or an 8. If we're at the level of a 3, and it's all good, it's all normal. We all have to evolve step by step by step. So there's nothing better about being a 9 or a 3 or a 4. It's a process. So yes, Aunt Mabel can be a guide, and but she's often not our primary guide. Does that answer your question?
It does, and it resonates with how it worked with me. The first guide I was aware of was somebody I knew 100 years ago, but as I cleared, as I refined, as I grew, then while, you know, they'll still wave from the balcony and, you know, we'll share a virtual beer, my guides are higher self. My guides are specifically what feel like angelic presences, which are a higher vibe. So what you just said makes total sense to me. Now, the question about Yogananda. From what I understand, and I'm always willing to learn and change, someone like Yogananda didn't have to come back down. He was done. But coming down as, if you will, an illuminating teacher, Yogananda Gandhi, these souls came down even though they didn't have to. All their karma was cleared specifically to be a great world teacher. Yes? No? What?
Okay. Yeah. Great. Again, great question. Yes, I completely believe, again, based on regression after regression, we do obviously evolve to high levels, and we get to a point where incarnation is purely a choice. I also, you know, I want people to quick kind of overriding comments. Why are we evolving? We're evolving to assist humanity, but we're evolving to assist humanity by evolving in order to become a guide ourselves. There are junior guides and there are senior guides. Even senior guides, such as Yogananda, or an ascended master, let's just pull a name, you know, Paul the Venetian, a name of an ascended master. That soul can opt, even though that is a highly evolved soul, or we might call Paul the Venetian a master guide, that soul can still choose to incarnate either to affect even higher, greater wisdom, which I equate evolution with higher wisdom, or that soul might incarnate to impact the planet because the planet is so in need of the energy of that particular soul. So who knows about Yogananda? Yogananda, Gandhi, you know, these kind of key names that we think of, you know, Sai Baba, they may come back. And they may be, you know, truly, and this may shock people, and it is my belief, Sai Baba or Yogananda or whatever, that soul could be your next door neighbor and could not be someone prominent. But you would recognize based on how they live their life. Probably you would recognize, put it that way, based on how they live their life, that they're an evolved soul.
Got it. Can we do what I call a double drop? There have been times when I've worked with a client who is seeing, for instance, in the Civil War, the Battle of Chickamauga, and they're describing it literally back and forth, clearly and with detail, with two different viewpoints from two different parts of the battle. And what we got was he had dropped down one side blue and one side gray.
Yes. That's a split incarnation, or some people call that parallel lives. Split incarnations are happening more and more and more because, again, our planet needs it. And we have a lot of experienced or advanced souls in body on the planet at this time, possibly more than ever before. That would be a whole long conversation. But yes, soul splits happen. And what you're describing is either that that soul was a blue and a gray, was on, you know, both sides of a battle, fighting for, you know, two different people fighting on either side of the battle. It's also possible that that soul could have been a guide at the time of the battle and could describe back and forth scenes on both sides. And it's slightly possible that soul was not in body at that time, but was serving as a spiritual guide to one or more of the soldiers in the battle.
Boy, I wish I still had contact with them to explore that whole line, but that's like 6-7 years ago. We're coming up on just about time to close. I first want to tell you have been such a good sport letting me throw so many eggs at the refrigerator to see what sticks. But it's been so much fun. I love dialogue like this, and I know that my listeners have learned. I certainly have. Again, where are people going to find you? Where can they find your books? And what do they need to know as we wrap this up?
Well, my website is ravenheartcenter.com. I work with clients both in regression and what I call spiritual mentoring. That's counseling from a soul perspective. I do that by phone and face-to-face. And I travel a lot, Corby. So people might want to go to my website and see where I'm going to be. I give talks about my work. I guide clients in different parts of the country and sometimes outside the country. So ravenheartcenter.com is the best way to find out what I'm doing and where I am and my book and all of that.
If you wanted to give the listeners one last golden nugget of wisdom when it comes to who we are, who we've been, who we seek to be, what'd you tell them?
I would say trust you are here with purpose, which I suspect from what you've said all your listeners know. Your purpose is tied to your passions. So in your passions, and again, I don't mean your passion for ice cream, like I said earlier, but your passion for what you love to do. Like Corby says, thank you for, you know, letting me throw these, you know, eggs and see what sticks. I love these kinds of conversations. So know you're here with purpose, know you're guided, and know you're being pushed possibly quite hard to evolve. And that's why life feels so challenging.
All of us down here now, folks, are important. Not one of us has a throwaway life because, number one, if you listen to these kinds of shows, if you read books such as Linda's, if you are curious and ask questions beyond the norm, trust me, you are a light worker like the rest of us. And we need you to embrace all of yourself. We need you to trust that you're here for a reason, that you can't get it wrong. Remember, you don't flunk. God does not say, I'm going to send you back for the exact same incarnation because you didn't do it right. You're going to graduate. But the best part is when you can return home with knowledge, with adventures, with clarity for your own soul, and knowing how many other souls you've touched. That, my friends, will be an incarnation you're going to remember in the next one. So if you're going to try to find me when I'm not on the radio, go to firethroughspirit.com. You can find me on Facebook, Fire Through Spirit. You can find me on Twitter, Corby Mitlide. You can find me on Best Psychic Directory and ESPsychics.com. Or you can reach me at 877-321-CORBY. That's 877-321-2672. I hope you've had as much fun this week as I have, and next week just promises to be even better. So until then, have a great 7 days. We'll see you then.